This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. Dr. Everett Piper here from Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins, who's, I usually say, I don't know where he is. I jokingly say he's fishing, golfing, taking a well-deserved break, but I actually do know where Tony is right now. He's traveling to Oklahoma. He is probably arriving in Tulsa as we speak because he's scheduled to speak here at Oklahoma Wesleyan University tomorrow for our morning chapel. He'll be receiving the President's Award, which is the highest honor that the university gives away every year. So Tony Perkins is on his way to my backyard, my home, Oklahoma Wesleyan University. He'll be speaking in our chapel tomorrow, honoring us here and giving our students and our alumni, our homecoming chapel, by the way, our alumni, a real treat. Again, this is Everett Piper. I am president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. As you know, Oklahoma Wesleyan stands boldly and unapologetically for the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture, something that's highly unusual in our culture today, even within the Christian academic community. Let's do a little housekeeping, set the agenda for the day so you all know what's coming up. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234. The call-in number, 866-372-7234. We will be taking calls in the last 15 minutes of the program. At the top of the hour, we're going to have Tim Huelskamp, the former congressman from Kansas, join us, and he will talk to us about the budget legislation that was authorized today in the Congress by a very narrow vote. I believe it was 216 to 214. Is that right? I think I'm pretty close on that. He's going to tell us what that means, where it's going to go, what we should be prepared for, should we be making phone calls, pro, con, et cetera, et cetera. Very important that we understand what's going on in terms of the budgeting process right now, because if we don't get our money right, then we're going to have a lot of other things that are going to fall apart thereafter. At the quarter-hour break, we will then bring in Jack Yost. Jack is a former Assistant Secretary for Health and Human Services. He has written the memo, How the Classified Military Document That Helped the U.S. Win World War II Can Help You Succeed at Business. Jack is going to help us talk about, and he's going to lead us through the discussion, of the JFK classified documents being released very soon, this week, I believe. And then at the bottom of the hour, we will go to Nikita Vladimirov, who is with the Campus Reform, journalist with Campus Reform. He is going to talk about something near and dear to my heart, and that is the campus lunacy that's taking place and the fact that our colleges and universities have literally lost their minds. Then when we go into the final 15 minutes of the hour, I'll start out with a little bit of my own monologue. It'll be brief, and then I will expect and hope and request your phone calls, 866-372-7234. So the House narrowly passed budget legislation this morning, 216 to 12. I was wrong when I said the 14. 216 to 12. There's a four-vote margin. This paves the way for the potential for large-scale tax reform. No Democrats voted for the budget, and 20 Republicans did not vote for this particular budget. So what does this mean? I would like to welcome to Washington Watch former Kansas Congressman Tim Huelskamp, and he's also the president of the Heartland Institute. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Dr. Piper, it is a pleasure to be on with you, and thank you for the invitation.
Well, honored, obviously. I'm sorry you've got to go with the second stringer here today. Bear with me. Make me look good, okay?
I will do my best, and that's not hard. Doctor, you've done some great things at Oklahoma Wesleyan, and much to be proud of. So appreciate that work.
And I take that as a real compliment from a neighbor who probably does know a little bit about what we're doing down here. So thank you. I appreciate that. All right. This is a complicated issue. You understand it better than any of us. I know you understand it better than me. Often, I think a lot of voters, when we start hearing about the taxes and revenue and expenditures and this massive debt, the massive deficit, what's the difference between debt and deficit, all this, it turns into eye-crossing nonsense at times for a lot of the voters, but we need to understand it. So I would like to give you a little bit of latitude to tell us what this legislation means, explain it to us in layman's terms, help us understand what we're supposed to be doing about it, whether we should be for it or against it. I know I'm asking you 1,000 different questions, and that's not a good way to start an interview, but at least I'm giving you a little bit of leeway here to just educate us.
Well, I appreciate that, Doctor. And you did note one thing at the beginning, which is very important to point out, that no Democrats voted for this resolution in either the House nor the Senate. And but what we have here is the reason they're adopting this resolution is there's no bipartisan interest in actually reforming the tax code. But if you look at our tax code, and I served 6 years in Washington, I can tell you that the tax code is a politician's playhouse. It's a way for politicians to give out favors to reward political contributors. As a result, over decades, the tax code has now expanded to more than 70,000 pages. You know, most Americans, myself, can't even figure out their own tax burden. Former IRS commissioners couldn't even figure out their tax burden. So we need to simplify the tax code. We also think that we're paying too much in taxes. Internationally, we pay, it depends on how you quite count it, but either number one, two, or the third highest tax rates in the world, and it's not very transparent. And what the resolution day was about was to actually start the process. It's not to, to vote and pass a tax bill. We're still waiting to see what the actual language will look like. But President Trump and Congress was elected. A very strong message was sent last November to get rid of the status quo. And I think the tax code represents the worst about Washington, D.C., where you have special interest groups that have literally littered the tax code with thousands, tens and thousands of special interest provisions that most Americans can't take advantage of. It's for big businesses. It's for those who have lobbyists, and it's rigged. It's unfair. But with this resolution today, a bill can be introduced and considered hopefully in the House and Senate that will do a number of things. Hopefully it will follow the direction of the president, and that would reduce the tax rates both for individuals and corporations, allow us to become more competitive internationally. I believe it's going to be family friendly. But what I do want to say, Doctor, is we don't know for sure what's going to be in there, but it sets the stage for that debate. And there are some arcane rules in the U.S. Senate, and most Americans say, well, I thought simple majority rules. Well, no, generally not in the U.S. Senate. They got to get 60 votes to do about anything, including a recess for lunch, and this would allow them to proceed forward, and a simple majority could actually change the tax code. So in the next few days, we'll see what those details are, but I believe they will be family-friendly. They will reduce the rates and let Americans keep more of their money.
Okay, so 20 Republicans did not vote for this. Talk to me about that. Why? Why did the Republicans join the Democrats in voting or not voting for something that you, obviously, in the last few minutes have described to us as something that you probably, if you were still in Congress, would have voted for, I assume?
I would have, and there were a couple different reasons why a few Republicans have voted no, and you can ask the Democrats why they all, every one of them, voted to maintain the status quo. So we'll grant that they don't want to change anything. But the 20 Republicans, I think there were two different concerns. One is concerns of folks from pretty liberal states that were worried about a deduction that takes place, you know, a way to reduce your taxes in certain high-tax states and, in all states. Whatever you pay to the income taxes to the state and the local government, you can deduct those from your federal tax bill. So in essence, Washington has been subsidizing high taxes in New York and in California and in Illinois and multiple other states. A lot of legislators from these high tax states were afraid for that deduction would be removed. And essentially, it does incentivize. It does encourage blue states to raise taxes because Washington and the rest of us, I come from a red state, they repay back high tax states, or the Republicans from that. And the Republicans have this concern, as do I, that if they don't cut spending along with reducing taxes, it could substantially increase the deficit. And that's actually the projection of the Congressional Budget Office, which is wrong on about everything. But there are concerns of folks that just like you and me, think Washington ought to balance their budget just like families do and churches have to eventually do and individuals and businesses. But in this case, they voted no because they want to make certain that this doesn't contribute to the deficit, which is a real goal.
So you had some conservatives. You had some conservative Republicans actually vote against this because they don't see the proof that there's actually a seriousness about decreasing expenditures. Am I paraphrasing you correctly, or do you want to redirect?
Doctor, I think you're right, and you can look at their statements, and I understand that, and they want to send a message because the Republican Congress has shown this one, and most of the others have shown no desire to reduce spending. But the resolutions they did talk about all the above, revenue and spending. But at the end of the day, what's going to happen here will be the introduction of a tax package, not a spending package. That's, they're going to work on that in a separate bill that will be considered later this fall.
Let me talk to you about a deduction that's near and dear to my heart. I know it's been discussed, and I don't know how open the current Congress and Senate is to this, but it's been discussed that the deductions for 501c3 organizations such as Christian colleges and universities, Oklahoma Wesleyan University, that if you give money to me right now, you can claim it as a deduction. I've heard a lot of talk, even on the right of the aisle, that deduction could be in jeopardy. What do you have to say about that? Any insider scoop?
Well, what I'm hearing, it's not in jeopardy. And certainly you would hope that a deduction like the deduction for state and local income taxes, which encourages high taxes, would be removed. But it looks like, from as far as I hear, the charitable deduction will remain, which is so American that most Americans don't think government should do everything. And certainly that portion of the tax code makes it abundantly clear that we appreciate the work at the Oklahoma Wesleyan University and the literally tens and thousands of other groups, including the Heartland Institute, that we do good work, and our churches do great work, and take your pick. And Americans, I think that's very American, and I'm hopeful it will stay as a representation that government is not the answer to everything.
So talk to me about the Heartland Institute. What is it, and what are you leading right now north of the border here in Oklahoma?
Well, right now the Heartland Institute is based outside of Chicago. So I had to move a little bit for this job. But the Heartland Institute at heartland.org is a national think tank, and we propose free market solutions to America's social and economic problems. And what we believe at the end of the day is, Americans make better choices about their own money and their families and their community difficulties than government bureaucrats and politicians, whether they be in Washington or state capital. So we encourage personal responsibility. We encourage health reform that puts patients back in charge. We encourage public policies that let American families keep more money in their pocket. We've been around for 33 years. We've got 40 employees, and we work in all 50 states, encouraging the adoption of free market principles that are consistent with those of our founding fathers, the understanding of personal responsibility and constitutional limits, and an understanding that the most valuable thing about America is our understanding, certainly my personal belief and understanding of our freedom comes from God and not from government.
Is there any contact information you want to give so the listeners can learn more about the Heartland Institute?
Check us out online at heartland.org, and that is a great place to see our efforts and communicate with us and see where what solutions we can provide for any local community or state problems that you have in your area.
Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you
so much for spending time with us. Coming up next, the long-anticipated release of the classified JFK documents are to be released today, I'm told, and we will return with Jack Yost to talk about that in much greater detail right after this break.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers. In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. A candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
And welcome back to the Family Research Council's Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. No, this isn't Tony. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony this afternoon. And as I said in the first segment, I'm honored that Tony is on a plane flying in my direction right now, where he will be speaking at Oklahoma Wesleyan University's homecoming chapel tomorrow morning and receiving our President's Award here. Well, as I said, in this segment, we want to talk about the release of the JFK classified files. This has been a long time in coming. We've known it was going to happen. We have with us right now Jack Yost, the former Assistant Secretary for Health and Human Services and author of The Memo, How the Classified Military Document That Helped the U.S. Win World War II Can Help You Succeed in Business. Jack, welcome to Washington Watch.
Delighted and honored to be here, Dr. Piper. I'm one of your biggest fans. It's an honor.
Oh. Well, you need to talk to my wife and convince her to get on board, okay?
Okay.
All that aside, you've got an interesting perspective. You've been in the government yourself. You probably have a little bit more knowledge on what classified documents are and aren't, and you actually have written a book telling us how one classified document actually can be used as a model for success. Before we get into that explanation of your book, however, talk to us a little bit about the JFK documents and what you think they're going to do for our culture. Is this meaningful at all, and if so, why?
It's only meaningful because it's full disclosure and it's open and transparent, and it opens up the archive of all the documentation there. Because as you're rightly getting at, is that our free society works best when we've got free access to all the materials, to all the information, to all of the study, and when we have access to all of the papers, then if we had access in the beginning, if LBJ allowed the access at the beginning, we would have eliminated decades of conspiracy theories and second-guessing and wondering because the government wasn't transparent, wasn't open and honest.
Now, why weren't they? I mean, that may be a stupid question, but why not just disclose or release these documents decades earlier? Go ahead.
No, you're exactly right. You know, as Cervantes told us, honesty is the best policy, and it should have been. And I had a chance years ago when I had a small consulting assignment in the Reagan administration, and I was working with a woman of a certain age who actually worked on the commission, and she said there were just so many unanswered questions that Lyndon Baines Johnson didn't want addressed. He didn't want distractions, and he wanted to get on with his agenda. So he thought that he could close it down and stop all the speculation, all the worrying, and all this grief that was going on with the assassination of a beloved president. He just wanted to stop it. So I can't speak to his heart, but I think that he was trying to do the right thing for maybe for the wrong reasons, but he was trying to get the country to move on, and that doesn't work.
Okay, well, let's shift gears here. Your book, what memo, and i.e. classified document, do you discuss in your book, and what's your premise? What can we learn from it?
The start point was, it's a fascinating issue in that the great business guru, Peter Drucker, said that World War II was won not by the force of arms, not superior strategies, not armament, not our force, but through management. So if World War II was won through USA managing an effort, how much more could business learn? Because I teach management for a living, at the Catholic University of America. So what could we learn from that? And what this was a memo. It was on two pages, not one. It was an actual physical document, and I traveled down to the MacArthur Museum down in Norfolk, Virginia, and actually had a chance to handle the original memo, which was a classified restriction. It was restricted, which is a very basic, it's a very light classification in that it limits the dissemination of the document, because General MacArthur's staff didn't want it to go out to anybody that didn't have a need to know, or to show the enemy how we were going to win through managing. And that lies a couple of things on completed staff work, and has applications today.
Fascinating. Now, time is short here, but let me ask you this one last question. What are your observations concerning Donald Trump's leadership style, pursuant to your premise?
That management is getting things done through the active support of other people. And his key hire on that is General John Kelly, who knows how to get things done. And his job was not to manage the president. His job was to manage the process. So he's the chief of staff, and he makes the trains run on time and provides the access of getting things done with completed staff work, so that the boss doesn't get half-baked ideas that are tossed over the transom. General Kelly's done that. And what Donald Trump has done was to hire the right people. The biggest mistake that a boss can make is to make a bad hire. And so far, Donald Trump has made some good hires, especially starting with his chief of staff.
Any downside?
The downside, of course, is what Ronald Reagan had with his, one of his chiefs of staff, Reagan, who so limited access to the president that President Reagan was a very social animal, and Nancy Reagan was real upset that Reagan was cutting out his friends, his social connections. So you're right, there is a downside. For social beings like Donald Trump, who likes access, who likes to get information from multiple sources, when it's being limited, he may feel claustrophobic. So far, he's lived under the constraints of limited access of information that's being filtered and complete to him. But you're right. That's your presidents, politicians, extroverts, outgoing people love to be around people. But being the CEO of a company, it has a lot of responsibility, and time is his noblest possession. Time is the most valuable that the president has.
How do we get your book? Tell us the title one more time and a link to the book. Real quick here.
Yes, The memo. It's by Yost, Y-O-E-S-T, the memo, how the classified military document that helped the U.S. win World War II can help you succeed in business. And it's available on Amazon, traditional outlets, and online.
Thank you so much, Jack. It's an honor to have you on Washington Watch this afternoon. Coming up next, the University of Virginia now requires all incoming freshmen to complete an Understanding Implicit Bias class. And we will be discussing that with Nikita Vladimirov from the College Reform. Right back after this break.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in again this afternoon here on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Honored to have the opportunity to pinch hit for Tony every once in a while. So you all know, if you've listened to me at all, or if you've ever had an opportunity to read my book, Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth. Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth, where I'm challenging the lunacy of the Snowflake Rebellion, of the ideological fascism that's prevailing on our campuses from coast to coast, from Brown to Berkeley and every place else in between. This nonsense, the fact that we've literally lost our mind, we've lost common sense, we've lost the ability to engage in the campus green, in the college campus, in the classroom, in the auditorium, we can't tolerate anyone else's intolerance. It's lunacy. It's self-refuting at every turn. These students are sawing off the branch upon which they sit, and the faculty are handing them the saw. Well, what we have right now is another story, and they are so replete. You can find one every day. But this one is about the University of Virginia. It's now requiring that all incoming freshmen must complete a quote-unquote understanding implicit bias educational program during their first few months on campus. I've told you 1,000 times why in the world, or I've asked you 1,000 times, why in the world do you spend 18 years of your life training up your child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart? And then in the first 18 minutes, as you drive away from the campus of your choice, they start ripping his heart, mind, and soul out. And this is the proof. Understanding implicit bias is a required educational program, I would call it indoctrination, during their first few months on this college campus. With us right now is Nikita Vladimirov. Nikita, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you work for Campus Reform. You're an investigative journalist, correct?
That is right.
And you've gone into the University of Virginia, and you've done a little research on this story with regard to this Understanding Implicit Bias program that's now being required of all students. Why don't you take a minute to tell us what that program is, and then I obviously am going to direct you to tell us what's wrong with it. So tell us about the program. What did you discover?
Well, the program is designed to have students uncover their implicit bias. And obviously this is it's trying to push a very progressive, very liberal agenda. Notably, however, the school insists that the module is not political or ideological.
Of course not, right?
Right. Several students, however, did know that they feel like it was pushing a liberal agenda, and this is one of the most important points, because if you are truly trying to create a course, suppose it is for a noble cause, but students notice that you have a clear agenda to the right or to the left, and you're not doing your job as a scholar or as a researcher. You're supposed to set up these courses to be independent, to be bipartisan and unbiased, but obviously, as this demonstrates, this course is not part of those categories.
You report that one student at UVA in your research actually said this. Maybe it's more than one student, but this is a quote that I see in your article, that they are pressuring us to associate black people with bad things and white people with good things, unquote, so that these students could then be criticized for being biased and racist and bigots. But yet the questions and the curriculum and the program pushes this categorization, this pigeonholing of students to actually associate black people with bad and good and white people with good. Is that what you really heard?
Yes. These are the type of techniques that are typically used, which is, again, points to just really poor scholarship when it comes to putting this type of program together. Now, unfortunately, this is the sort of thing, as you well know, the type of thing we see at Leadership Institute's Campus Reform all over the country, to where universities subject their students to similar forms of programs when it comes to either their freshman orientation programs, which are typically lengthy, or if they wanted to become an RA, for example, which is a person who works with the administration, a student who works with the administration to supervise other students to make sure that they don't party and stuff in their hallways. Very often, this type of programs also require students to undergo similar educational type of programs to uncover their implicit bias. So this is not new, and unfortunately, it happens all over the country.
One of the quotes I'm fond of referring to that was prophetic in terms of what we see today on the college campus was Richard Rorty, who's dead now, but a premier philosopher of the last 30, 40 years in the American Academy. He taught at a variety of different institutions. I think this particular quote comes from Columbia. I may be wrong on the university when he was a professor there. He said to parents as they dropped their kids off during new student orientation, "Parents, we're going to go right on making your ideas seem silly rather than desirable in the minds of your sons and daughters," unquote. And isn't what you're seeing right now exactly that? It's the attempt to take the traditional idea, the orthodox idea, the conservative idea, the Judeo-Christian idea, and besmirch it and make it seem silly rather than desirable in the mind of this 18 or 19-year-old freshman. Isn't that the case?
Of course. I would agree with that. I would also add this. I think universities in this country, they used to be the epitomes of free thought and free expression. They really did. They used to encourage students to take this risk of thinking for themselves and discovering the true beauty of intellectual discourse. But unfortunately, today they would much rather see their campuses turn into museums of multiculturalism. This visual exhibit of students who have different skin tones, but unfortunately have the very exact same views.
Yeah. Nikita, thank you so much. Got to take a break right now. Thank you so much for being with us on Washington Watch. Great research, great information, very important. Again, this is Dr. Everett Piper. I'll be coming up right after the break with some monologue and then taking your calls. The call-in number is 866-372-7222.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. I have the privilege of sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon, who is on the road traveling to Oklahoma, God's country, and actually my own campus here at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, where he will be speaking tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock at our homecoming chapel. For those listeners who might happen to be in the Tulsa or Bartlesville or even Oklahoma City or even southern Kansas area, you're more than welcome to come and attend the chapel service here on our campus tomorrow in Bartlesville and hear Tony and maybe even get a chance to shake his hand afterwards. We're honored to be able to partner with him and the Family Research Council. Very honored to be able to share in bringing a common message and a common cause with common conviction and courage to a culture that desperately needs to hear what Tony stands for and the Family Research Council provides. All right, a couple things as I get ready to talk a little bit here, just for a few minutes. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, and I do want your calls. Call in, they'll put you on hold for a second, they'll flag me and let me know that you're there, and I'll shut up and I'll try to take the call and respond to your questions and comments. But to set the stage, why do we not talk about social justice at Oklahoma Wesleyan University? Why do we not talk about social justice? And why are we more interested in teaching virtue than victimization? Well, first of all, I don't believe, nor do our faculty and our scholars at Oklahoma Wesleyan believe, that justice is defined by society. Justice is not defined as a social construct. justice is biblical. It's not social. So we talk very aggressively and passionately about biblical justice at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, but we do not imbibe the idea and drink the Kool-Aid about social justice. Because when you start defining justice within a social construct, a malleable and movable and changeable idea rather than a constant, immutable, self-evident truth that is endowed to us by our Creator rather than created by you and me, then justice becomes unjust. And you hear things like, I can't tolerate your intolerance, or I hate hateful people. I am sure that nothing is sure, and I'm absolutely confident there are no absolutes. You start hearing these self-refuting claims because man becomes the definition of what is just and unjust, rather than that standard of justice being something bigger and better than you and me. There's a reason that Lady Justice is blind, because she's not supposed to put her thumb on the scales. When you rip the blindfold off and you're tempted to tip the scales in your favor, as opposed to an immutable standard that doesn't change with your opinion, then justice is lost. Many Christian colleges today are having days of social justice. They're talking about privilege. They're talking about these things as being the priority of the campus rather than the principles of Scripture. And I would argue that it's the words of Jesus, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, that gives you good education, true education, real education, and just education, as opposed to these programs such as you see at the University of Virginia, which are indoctrination programs seeking to perpetuate a subjective idea of what is just and what is not, rather than those time-tested principles that are endowed to us, those self-evident truths that are given to us by our Creator, biblical, scriptural principles that set the standard for freedom. And as I've said many times, when you get rid of the big laws of God, you don't get liberty. You get thousands of little laws that rush in to fill the vacuum. All right. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. I do welcome your calls. I was cited this past week by Right Wing Watch, an organization that defines itself as a project of people for the American way. They cited me and criticized me, put me on their Right Wing Watch list for, quote unquote, supporting Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council's record on issues including gender identity, unquote. Well, the specific statement which I apparently made that caused them such angst, was made on this radio program when I was sitting in as the guest host here on Washington Watch. And I apparently said this. This is what the Right Wing Watch says I said. Quote, why are we being silent in the face of a culture that is degrading and insulting a female by saying she's not a biological fact, but that she's nothing but a fantasy and a fabrication? Shouldn't we defend the dignity and identity of a woman? You can't be a feminist if you deny the feminine. You can't be pro-woman if women aren't real. And my response to this claim by Right Wing Watch and People for the American Way that I said these alarming things on this program, guilty as charged. Yes, I did. At Oklahoma Wesleyan University, we still teach logic and philosophy, and shocking as it seems, our curriculum still includes the basic time-tested truths of physiology and genetics and even gender. At Okwu, our students graduate from this university recognizing the ontological and biological fact of the female. Our faculty are not science deniers. They pursue the truth. They don't ignore it. They honor the actual, the confirmed, and the definite, and they recognize what is plain and verifiable. They embrace the empirical. Our professors actually believe in facts. At this university, we don't offer degrees in feelings. You don't major in opinions here. We actually envisage that after 4 years of study in our halls and in our classrooms that you will learn something. We expect and hope that your diploma from Okwu will testify to the fact that you actually know a little bit more about what is true and what is right and what is real than you did when you started here 4 years earlier. The scholars at my university have concluded that a female is an objective reality and not merely a social construct. Now, crazy as that sounds, we've actually concluded that women are not make-believe. They're not leprechauns or unicorns, but rather they objectively and verifiably exist. Call us stupid, but we hold that there's very little that's more empirically obvious in the history of all of human experience than one sex. Standing on this millennia-old foundation of tradition, reason, experience, and revelation, we refuse to participate in the misogynistic insult of a woman by ignoring such self-evident truths. Now, as the result of this 5,000-year-old educational paradigm, which seems quite foreign to the writers of Right Wing Watch, we believe women should be granted the dignity of having equal access to athletics and other programs as well as their own facilities. Women attending this university will not only have their own basketball and soccer teams, but they will also have their own restrooms and showers and dorms. Call, you know, yes, it is quite true that we refuse to let any of these rights be taken away by any confused or dysphoric male who insists on compromising the person or the privacy of our female students. We won't permit any man or misguided political agenda or organization to violate the dignity of the women on our campus by pretending that a male is something he's not. So, to those who cry that the above position discriminates against the biological men who want to avail themselves of women's programs and privileges, as well as a woman's privacy, I say yes. Oklahoma Wesleyan University indeed does discriminate. We discriminate between those who are male and those who are female. To do otherwise would seem to contradict the very premise of Title IX, a 1972 law, which requires us to differentiate, discriminate, if you will, to differentiate the female student from the male student and to thereby give women the same access to programs as men. If we didn't discriminate in such a way, how in the world would it be possible to comply with Title IX in the first place? Yep, I said it. You can't defend the rights of a woman if you don't believe women are real, and you can't claim to be a feminist if you deny the very existence of the feminine. At Oakwu, Oklahoma Wesleyan University, I'm honored to stand with the likes of Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council. We are pro-woman, and we're proud of it. We stand with Tony and the Family Research Council for the dignity and the identity of women. We stand with FRC and Tony in defending the rights of our youngest children to live. We stand with them in defending the rights of every American to practice his religion, both in his church and in the public square. We stand with the Family Research Council in the fight for human freedom and human responsibility. We stand proudly with the Family Research Council and Tony Perkins. Yep, I said it. I am proud to be associated with the Family Research Council. Okay, 866-372-7234. Bobby, I think I have one caller waiting for me. Is that true? Give me the name again. Joseph in Alabama, are you still on the line?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Joseph, I'm doing great. What's the weather like down your way? Where do you live in Alabama?
Mobile.
Mobile?
Right now I'm in Mississippi, so Mississippi is about maybe 75, 78 degrees.
Well, you're blessed. What can I do for you?
Well, I just want to thank you for your book. Your book is amazing. And I just want to give you a scripture, and then I'm going to pray for you.
Well, thank you.
This is 2 Thessalonians, 2nd chapter, the 16th verse. It says now, 2 Thessalonians, 3rd chapter, the 1st verse. Finally, brothers, and I'm talking to all those listening, pray for us, that the word of the Lord may speed ahead and be honored as happened among you, and that he may be delivered from the wicked and evil men, for not all have faith. And I'm asking your audience to pray for you to continue to stand, because I know I'm a missionary, so I understand it. Many people are going to come against you, but I ask folks to pray for you that you can stand and continue having people coming to your campus like Tony Perkins that continue hold up the word of God and the will of God, because we live in a time that's absolutely crazy of the devil.
Thank you so much. Very kind words. I appreciate that so much. You said you wanted to pray. Is there anything you wanted to pray before I let you go?
Yeah, I'm going to pray for you, and I'm going to ask the Lord to bless you.
All right. Go ahead, please.
Father, in the mighty name of Jesus, I ask you to lift up Brother Piper, his family, and all connected to him at his college, and that he continue to stand for the gospel of Jesus Christ with all his heart. And I just thank you so much for him, and that his book may sell many, many copies to open up hearts to your perfect will. I pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you so much. I'm honored that you called in. I'm very appreciative of your comments, your scripture, and your prayer. Thank you. And continue to pray for Tony and the Family Research Council and the wonderful work that they're doing for all of us that are listening. They're lobbying, they're supporting, they're challenging, they're fighting for your religious freedom, for your right to practice your faith in the public square, as well in the privacy of your church and your home. Your constitutional liberties are important to the Family Research Council, and Tony Perkins holds those very dear and has committed himself to be your voice not only in Washington, D.C., but around the country. And again, I'm proud to stand with anybody that is going to fight for freedom as opposed to fascism. I'm proud to stand for anybody that understands that liberty is the end goal and the outcome of recognizing the power of a biblical worldview. 866-372-7234. Sharina in Missouri, do I still have you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, welcome to Washington Watch. What can I do for you, Sharina?
Thank you for taking my call. I really just wanted to thank you for your comments and your response to the issue on women and the transgender. I, as a Christian conservative woman, it's very encouraging to know that, you know, somebody has the courage to stand up and fight for those rights. So I just want to say thank you, and please continue to fight the good fight.
Sharina, thank you. And even here's, let me say a little bit more about that. You said as a Christian conservative woman, and I agree, every Christian, every conservative, every woman should appreciate the fact that somebody is fighting for their dignity and their identity and not allowing someone else to steal either. Someone is speaking up for your privacy, for your programs, for your sports, for your facilities, and suggesting that no male that or anyone else that wants to violate your privacy in such an egregious way and take away those things that are common sense and are given to you by common law should be compromised. Let me give this as an example, and then I'm going to bring on another caller that's waiting for me right now. Take female athletics, for example. How in the world can I have a women's basketball team if I allow any biological male who wants to raise his hand on a given day and say that he's a female, take that particular sport away from the biological woman? Women's athletics would disappear if every time there is a biological male who wants to participate in the female sport, supplants the woman's right to hold that sport, hold that facility, hold that scholarship, avail herself of the shower, of the restroom, of the locker room, and all the rights and privileges that Title IX, 1972 law, guarantees her. You can't have a law that requires colleges and universities to give women equal access to athletics and other programs if you then turn around and pretend that women don't exist and that they're not objective facts, but they're a social construct. That program, that Title IX program, disappears if the subject and the object, the beneficiary of that program, ceases to be an objective fact, ceases to be empirically valid, ceases to be a fact rather than a feeling. If feelings supplant the fact of the female, then the first people to lose are going to be women. I only have 1 minute left here, so I'm going to have to not take the next caller. I'm sorry for putting you off at this. So I'm going to bring some concluding comments here, and then I'm just going to give you some encouragement and bid you all a good evening. But remember this. Remember this. Freedom is always found within the fences that are defined by God. You tear down those fences, you're not going to get freedom. You're going to get ideological fascism rather than academic liberty, and that's what you see prevailing in the campus screen, the college square, and even in the cultural debate. Again, this is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch, and remember this, fight the good fight. Fight the good fight, because in the end, we know who wins. Blessings, and have a good evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.